Whenever we read about dragons or serpents in the Bible, they're used to signify things opposed to God, whether we're reading about the temptation of Eve in Genesis 3, or about the seven-headed red dragon in Revelation. It always shows up as an adversary to God and his purposes. So it's interesting when we take a quick gander at historical Babylon, and find out that the serpent or dragon played a major role in their own symbolism. In Babylonian mythology, the god Marduk defeated a dragon called Mushusu, and as a result of this, the dragon became the symbol of Marduk's power. It wasn't the giant winged, fire-breathing creature we usually think of today. Mushusu was four-legged, kind of like a dog, only his rear legs were more like eagle's legs and feet. He had scales and a lion's tail, and his tongue was like a serpent's tongue. If you want to see an image, you can look up pictures of the Ishtar Gate in the Pergamon Museum in Berlin. Really interesting pictures. There were other dragons in Babylonian myth too, and some of them were multi-horned, which is interesting. The Babylonian god of chaos, Tishpak, was also depicted as a more serpent-like entity. Now, what I find compelling in all this is the apocryphal book Bel and the Dragon. It tells how the prophet Daniel, according to the story, was working to prove to the king that his gods were false. Exactly which king we're dealing with is unclear. But after proving that Bel or Baal or Baal or Marduk was nothing more than a statue, Daniel then set out to prove that the dragon they worshipped was no god. But here's the thing. According to the story, this dragon they worshipped was an actual creature, an actual zoological entity that they could touch and feed. And Daniel, to prove the dragon is a false god, poisons and kills it. I'll let you draw your own conclusions on that. My point is that the dragon was a very important symbol to Babylonians, very important. The first mention of dragons in the Bible is up for debate because the KJV translators used the word dragon and dragons very liberally, where that translation is rather dubious. But the first location that everyone agrees upon is in Isaiah. So we'll start with the last two verses of Isaiah 26 and then read into the first verse of chapter 27. Here's what it says. Come, my people, enter into your rooms and close your doors behind you. Hide for a little while until indignation runs its course. For behold, the Lord is about to come from his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. And the earth will reveal her bloodshed and will no longer cover her slain. In that day the Lord will punish Leviathan, the fleeing serpent, with his fierce and great and mighty sword, even Leviathan, the twisted serpent, and he will kill the dragon who lives in the sea. In Bible symbolism, the sea refers to the restless masses of humanity, kind of like Psalm 2, which says, "Why do the heathen or the nations rage," akin to the raging of the ocean's water. So when we read of this twisted serpent and dragon that lives in the sea, an entity against whom God has declared enmity, in the context of God punishing the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity, we know we aren't reading about an actual sea creature. God's using figurative speech. He's using symbolism. He's speaking of a massive, mighty entity living among the inhabitants of the earth, and a very intimidating one at that, if Job 41 is any indication. God isn't using the term dragon lightly. He's giving his people assurance in a time of fear that the day will come when this mighty beast that moves among the inhabitants of the earth comes to an end. And when he says dragon, that's a big clue. At the time of Isaiah, Israel was about to be conquered and carried away by Assyria, which was in fact an extension of Babylon. Nimrod founded Assyria, as we read in Genesis 10, verses 10 through 12. The beginning of his, Nimrod's, kingdom was Babel, and Erech, and Akkad, and Calna, in the land of Shinar. From that land he went forth into Assyria, and built Nineveh, and Rehoboth-ur, and Calah, and Rezin between Nineveh and Calah. That is the great city. Now, going back to the talk about dragons in the Bible, we really don't find a whole lot after Isaiah until we get to Revelation. Now, interpreting the signs in Revelation demands that we be familiar with the use of those signs throughout the Bible. The same divine author wrote the whole thing from Genesis to Revelation, so when we get all the way to the end of the book, we should be able to go back through the Bible and history to put together the clues and figure out what he's talking about. So in Revelation, we see the dragon for the first time in chapter 12, verse 13, and John describes it like this. Then another sign appeared in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns, and on his heads were 7 diadems. This is chock full of clues, so let's go over them. Heaven refers to places of power, high places, positions of rulership, so immediately we know we're talking about government. Then we find that this dragon has 7 heads. Heads represent authority, like we read elsewhere of the husband being the head of his wife or Christ being the head of his church. The dragon is also described as having 10 horns. Horns represent power and strength, as we find in the prophecies in Daniel 8. But then, to top it all off, we read that the dragon has 7 diadems, or crowns. You don't need to be a genius to figure this one out. This represents kingship or rulership. Hopefully I'll get into the color red at another time, but notice that everything about this dragon speaks of kings, of kingdoms, of earthly rulers and princes. People have said this dragon represents a fallen archangel called Lucifer, but if we take an honest exegetical look at the text, it just doesn't allow for that. This dragon can only represent human government, plain and simple. And this is the exact same monster that the great whore sits on in Revelation 17, verse 1, where it's described as full of blasphemous names, having 7 heads and 10 horns. It's the exact same beast that destroys the whore. And we'll get into all that a little later down the road. I'm just trying to establish continuity here. But going back to Revelation 12, verse 3, which we just broke down, unquestionably refers to human government. And the use of the word dragon harkens us back to Babylon. But then, and I want you to stay with me here because some folks are going to get hit with cognitive dissonance from this one. In the same chapter, talking about the exact same creature, after it wages war against what is described as Michael and his angels, I'll maybe do a study on that sometime, we read in verse 9, and the great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. Okay. Full stop. As I mentioned, this dragon is very clearly, according to the signs given to us, representative of human kings, rulers, princes, government. And just like we read in Isaiah 14 about the king of Babylon seeking to rise up to the throne of God but then getting cast down, we read of this dragon consisting of heads, horns, and diadems being cast down. But what does John call it? The serpent of old, who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. Okay, the word devil is transliterated from the Greek diabolos, which means traducer or false accuser, and Satan is not a name, but is rather a transliteration of the Greek word satanas, which means enemy. Those words were transliterated, not translated. That means the words themselves, rather than the meanings of the words, were carried over from the Greek to the English. the definition was lost. So if we were to read a translated version of this phrase, it would read, "The serpent of old who is called the false accuser and enemy who deceives the whole world." So, let's recap. What do we know about this dragon? It consists of kings, rulers, etc. So it is a governmental system. It is a liar. It is a deceiver. And it's the enemy of God and his people. Are you getting the picture yet? And I'm not making any of this up, okay? This is straight from the Bible with the help of concordances. Match that up with the historical information I shared a little bit ago, and you've got yourself a pretty good morsel to chew over. This has nothing to do with some kind of ethereal spiritual entity. This is an entity that you and I encounter every day in our day-to-day lives, and we call it government. God doesn't use symbols willy-nilly, okay? They're meant for people with the gumption and interest to look at, examine, explore, study. They have definite meaning. And unless we familiarize ourselves with the Bible and with history, we'll never really understand them. The Babylonian Leviathan, the dragon on which the whore sits, we'll get into her too, is still alive and well today, but its end is coming, and its end will be permanent. Praise God.